All right, let's get started. I'm going to put my very own timer here. Okay, Kip asked me to talk about, kind of set the stage for this whole discussion. So I have no idea what the other speakers will talk about, so you get my perspective. Okay, the advance doesn't work. So a cover crop has these functions. This is the definition that was put forth by Liu et al. In the 2000 paper. So dealing with soil erosion, soil fertility, diseases, everything. You might in general call them ecosystem services. So that's a big difference between a crop that's used as a cover crop and a main crop. They may be identical, the same species, but the goal is different. You're not after an economic yield. Successful cover crop species, these are just a couple examples. Increased organic matter, which is very important in the Southeast. We would go for rye, cereal rye, because it is the only crop that can give us that biomass in the time from October to March. If we want to inhibit wheat germination, we might pick black oats, Avena strigosa, because it has some allelopathic properties. Or if we go for nutrient immobilization, we're going for growth. So any grass might do. Annual ryegrass would be one way to do that. Or runoff prevention using Cura clover, Trifolium ambigium. And this is the experiment that Ken Albrecht put down at the Lancaster Center in southwestern Wisconsin. It's in the driftless area, steep slope, highly eroded soils. And what you see there is here you have these Cura clover rows, and in between this is where the corn would go. And this is what it would look like probably in August or sometime. So you still have, it's called a living mulch system. So that gets established once, and throughout its lifetime you will work with that stand. If you don't do it on that soil, this is what you see after a simulated rainfall. And this is a runoff that was collected. One of the few instances where even I, as a statistician, have to say you don't need statistics. You certainly don't want this. Certainly if you're a farmer and you want to hang on to your topsoil. Recently visited Jim Rogers down at the Noble Foundation, and part of their work is winter grazing. And they have two systems set up, either with tillage or no-till, and you can see already the difference in structure there. Hardly any structure where the soil is tilled, not surprisingly, in that climate, or the structure under no-till. Well, the idea here is to improve on that and add cover crops in the summer, and also to graze these summer cover crops, because it is expensive. Cover crops are expensive. And grazing them would allow the producer to recoup some of the costs. And this is a mixture of, what is it, seven components. This is actually just starting this. Some of cover crops you might be familiar with, others not, like cowpeas. If you're a southerner, yeah, you're familiar with it. This is buckwheat here. So that's one thing they are working on. Similarly, in Vernon, which is at the southern tip of the wheat belt, so it's in the border between Texas and Oklahoma, they are trying to improve their continuous winter wheat system, to improve soil fertility, improve soil structure, and they're looking at this rather complex mixture. Notice the price here. Just the seed price, it would be an inoculum, would be about $25 per acre. Again, their approach again is to utilize, look at grazing it in the summer, or at least partially grazing it, to recover some of the cost. And of course, they have another problem that they are ultimately going to run out of water. When you have a cover crop, you have to always take into consideration, how do you terminate that cover crop? Well, if you're a small holder in St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands, you're left with tools that you, some of you use for gardening. They use it to make a living. And one nice thing about certain cover crops is they are what I call self-terminating. This is Synapis alba, or white mustard in Bavaria, and these are sugar beets. And you can see, by the way, these stalks run. They were not rolled. They were winter killed. And with white mustard, it's very easy. I mean, you just show them a little cold, and they go away. Or like we do in the southeast, we have rye, and we can roll it straight, and then you plant in the rolling direction. Of course, this is a research equipment on the farm. This would be five times as wide. Or if you're in it. On a bedded system, you have a slightly different rig, and you might even add the chemical termination to it. So there, but that's an important consideration. If you have a cover crop and you can't kill it, and it's too competitive, you've got a problem with your main crop. When you look at the families there, I actually thought we had more grasses than legumes in that category, but I was wrong. This is the category that NRCS puts up on their plant website, all the species that have been used as cover crops. So three families, legumes, grasses, and brassicas, make up almost 90% of the cover crop spectrum that's used. There are many more uses there. Some families just have a single member used as cover crop. And it's a changing scenario. Let me show you a couple. This is Lab, and this is my colleague Ray Smith at Overton, who is maybe the only Lab breeder in the United States. So that's one species used. Of course, they are working on it not only as a cover crop, but also for summer grazing in conjunction with some summer grasses. This is one, this Ramtil is quite popular in Germany. It's composite. As you can see by its first name, where it came from Ethiopia. In Germany, they like it because it's tremendous top growth, but also root growth. No, this is not wild rice for you Minnesotans. This is the akenes of this composite. So, talk about species mixtures. Now, species mixtures have an intuitive appeal because from natural systems, they tell us species mixtures have more stability than single species system. Problem is, we're not dealing with a natural system. It's a highly artificial system, highly disturbed system. The European Community bought into this wholesale, and they have these so-called greening payments for green manuring. And if you have complex mixture that includes legumes, then you get higher payments. Well, this is the one I saw this summer. I did a bike trip in Germany, and so kept my eye out for stuff like that. Came by this field, and I had to stop. My personal photographer, aka known as my wife, was with me, and she took this picture. I went in there, and I was able to identify eight of these species. I didn't know what it was. And you can see here, of course, this is just your run-of-the-mill Chenopodium here, but you have peas here, you have sorghum, you have clovers here. So I didn't know that. So I called up a friend of mine, and talked about it, and he said, given the area, this is probably one of DSV, a German seed company's, one of their greening mixtures called Terra Life. And it has 12 components on it. The major one is field pea, or otherwise known as Austrian winter pea, sorghum, flax, phacelia, Hungarian vetch, crimson clover, outside clover, radish, this ramtil, Persian clover, sunflower, false flax. A lot of these will actually not survive the winters. That's why it's important to establish them early. And he came up with some cost, about 120 to 150 euros per acre, of which seed consists half of the cost. And so Jan gave me the this estimate, and he is the manager of a row crop operation, and he manages about 6,500 acres. So not all farms in Germany are small. This is in the former Eastern Germany. And this is a direct quote, planting cover crops after September 1st is equivalent to burning money. Very succinct. If you don't get that one, I'm not sure that you should even read cartoons, because you won't get them. So, on the national level, we have the same thing. NRCS is promoting these mixture, and the Plant Materials Center in California, you can read it all the way to Washington, they did an experiment with some common species and just asking this question, what happens when you plant the same cover or cover mixture in different locations? Why do they have an interest? Because it's EQIP incentive programs, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program. And these payments favor species mixture, and if you look at it, there's actually higher payments if a legume is involved. So it's basically for subsidy purposes, they're growing these mixtures. So they have either 2, 4, or 6 component mixtures. The two mixture components are our standard cool season one, and these were all cool season species. So we have a 50-50 mixture of rye and crimson clover at different seeding rates. Notice the cost here, it goes up, the minimum cost, and these were estimated, I think, at the Maryland location. So that may change from location to location. So ranging from less than $20 to almost $60 per acre. And those are just the pure seed cost. Then you have the 4 component mixtures. So you reduce rye and crimson and add hairy vetch and radish to the mixture. Radish is not a bad choice because radish has a large seed size and it has rapid germination and rapid establishment. Again, here now you're looking at the minimal cost there of $53 all the way to $161 for the highest seeding rate. This is probably enough to wipe out all the profits you might want to expect from a given acre of land. And then you have the 6 species mixture where they added oats and rapeseed to that mixture. And where the grains are now, it's still about half the percentage and the other half is proportion, and the other half is allocated to these to the broadleaves. Notice the price here is actually slightly less than for the four component mixture, because the seed that you're adding onto is fairly cheap compared to hairy vetch and radish. Now, the overall conclusion from that, you probably could have guessed that there is no one-size-fits-all all solutions. We need regional recipes. Specific conclusions were in eastern Oregon, they were eating up by slugs. In other locations, the broadleaves didn't establish really well. The only really positive note came from the California location that the radish, inclusion of the radish, had a positive effect on the succeeding crop, which was sweet corn. But otherwise, overall, if you read it, you can get it online. It's a rather bleak picture. What they found is that grasses provided the greatest amount of biomass. Also not surprising if you put rye, cereal rye, in the mixture. Legumes made only up a very small proportion of the final biomass. The concern with this approach is the cost, and it's really a big, big concern. The stuff, whatever you recommend, has to be affordable to the producer, because you want the producer to get in the mindset of an investment rather than cost. Well, the prices that I showed you are, it's all about cost. There's not even in consideration of investment, because the numbers are too high. You can never, with $161 seed cost per acre, I bet you couldn't find a farmer who would consider that an investment. So cost, certainly not. So here's the cost comparison. I just gave you a little graph here. Obviously, if you triple the seating rate, you triple the price. And here you can see that the four component is actually slightly higher in seat cost than the two component, because what I mentioned before, the components you add onto it are cheap compared to the other ones. So why did legumes do so poorly? I think it's a basic failure of understanding what species you're working with. Is that when you work with put small grains and legumes together, legumes are right off the bat not as competitive as your grasses. And in particular when you have a high seeding rate of your grass component. Part of this has to do with seed size. The other one is this juvenile rosette stage. Your legume will just sit there forever and a day while the grasses are slowly but steadily getting bigger and crowding out. There's no light for the legume. So there's an agronomic solution to this. We can simply modify the seeding rate. And we've done it in the coastal plains. We've done it. Generally, when we seed cereal rye, we seed about 90 pounds per acre will do us well. And crimson clover pure, about 20 pounds per acre. When we do a mixture, we drop the cereal rye component, at least we're trying to drop the cereal rye component to one-third, no more than one-third of the pure seeding rate, and while keeping the crimson clover at 20 pounds an acre. And that works, at least you have crimson clover in it. Came across a study from Beltsville that was just published in what August issue of Agronomy Journal from Beltsville, where they had did a replacement series with rye and hairy vetch, so all the way from zero rye to 168 kilos in pure stand, and hairy vetch, I think this should be 37 kilos. And in the mixture, the optimum mixture was 34 for rye and 27 for hairy vetch. So again, basically the same result, and done, not guesstimated, but done on a replacement series. And big consideration is when you have a legume, you want to seed it at the optimum time for the legume component, which you can roughly guesstimate as 4 to 6 weeks prior to the first average day of the first freeze, 28 degree freeze. That rule of thumb works pretty well. And it doesn't matter what cool season legume you have. Rye, and that's what makes it good, and I'll talk about later, has some characteristics that you don't need to seed in optimum time. And then, common sense recommendation, if you have to delay, you increase the seeding rate. The problem, of course, with cover crops is that the producer is focused on the main crop. In the southeast, it's cotton. They want to get that cotton out of the field, and then they want to worry about cover crops. And we can talk, and Kip knows this, we can talk till we are blue in the face about changing that, getting the producer to think in terms of growing degree days. When you are in early October, you're slowly but steadily running out of growing degree days. For the legume, for legumes to have to establish. And so it's really the key. We could increase cover crop productivity if they would run the picker, and the next morning when they can't pick, they would run the drill. That would be an ideal. And maybe, well, I don't think in my lifetime or my career I'll experience that. Now, occasionally you get a good producer who will internalize that, and those you consider your prime disciples, and you love these people because they finally, and they're happy with it, and they continue doing it because they're successful. Concerns with mixtures, as I mentioned before, is it affordable? And I talk a little bit about breeding later on. Seed placement, do we actually have the implements? I mean, you're talking about tiny seed like canola, or rapeseed, intermediate size like your radish, and humongous seed like your rye, cereal rye, oat, or wheat. Do we have the implements? I mean, if you do small and large seeds, you need at least two boxes on your drill. You shouldn't just sling the stuff out there, which is done. But if you want to minimize cost, minimize seeding rate, you've got to work on seed placement. Now, seed industry has worked, most of the legume seed, I believe, now is sold as in prill form, coated seed. So you have a little larger seed, gives you a little more control over the seeding rate, plus it actually reduces the number of seed per weight unit. Then have to talk about this in terms of investment. Is it really worth it? Do you, in the long term, increase your yield or productivity? You can talk about soil quality. Do you, in the long term, improve those parameters of your operation? And my big question with all these mixtures is, are the proportions that you plant are actually reflected in the final stand? If you put them in and they don't come up, or they come up like they are this and they disappear, I mean, you'd like to sell seed, but it doesn't do the producer any good. Now, the study I mentioned from Bellsville, that the replacement series, look at the Agronomy Journal articles. I think it was the August issue where they did that. And you can see that the legumes were not underrepresented. This is a paper by Nielsen in the same issue for the Plains, Great Plains. The greater expense associated with the mixture is not justified unless a certain cover crop forage quality is required for grazing or hay. And this is where the alternate uses come in. Then you might go for mixture, but you still have the problem that cover crop, the expensive components actually have to show up in the mixture. If you just plant them, they germinate and then they die. It's good for seed sales, but it's not good for productivity. Again, it's a whole series of articles in the August issue of Agronomy Journal, really neat. Here's a quote from an NRCS member wishing to remain anonymous. I don't even know who that person is, so don't ask me. Okay. Paraphrases, our cover crop mixture recommendations may have gone beyond evidence supported by available scientific research. Now, this is as much of an admission as I ever get, but I'll never get the person to do it. And it's not needed. Real important is that they realize that there is a problem. There's a lot of research that still needs to be done, particularly on a regional basis. What we really need is we need regional approaches for all the regions in the country, where people get together, supported by grant money, that we actually get at this problem and get away from this swag. You all know what a swag is, right? If you don't know, it's a public presentation, so I can't use certain terms that are in there. So if you don't know it, ask someone. Now, is there a universally best cool season? And that's what I'm familiar, cover crop. Not, but cereal rye comes very close. By the way, there is cereal rye in Oklahoma and also in West Virginia. They just didn't show up on the map. The nice thing is rye is adapted anywhere in the continental United States. Rye is fairly tolerant of acid soils. That's the area where I come from in northwestern Germany. That's why we have a culture of sourdough rye bread, because those were peat bogs, and underneath you have acid soils. It's tolerant of late seeding. Of all our grasses, it's most tolerant of late seeding. In fact, in the southeast, you can probably get away with at least get some stand planting as late as Christmas. It has a high biomass if you treat it right. Early seeding, a little bit added nitrogen. In the south, of course, we have the growth in the winter, and in the north, in Wisconsin, so we have that early growth in the spring. Again, here, how much growth we have in the winter when we use it for grazing, a popular mixture is actually cereal rye and annual ryegrass. Depends on the seeding rate and on the nitrogen level. Problem with rye is all has been for a long time the availability of seed. There are no dedicated rye seed producers. Now, I started a program actually breeding for maximum biomass in rye. And what we're actually going to do is we're going to look for plants that have out the bag, we're shooting for about 2 meters in height, and then using growth regulators to cut down on the growth so we can produce seed. And then forage quality, so this is where we may have to work on. Similarly for cool season, legume cover crops, crimson clover comes close. It will grow on most soil types except on heavy clay soils. Again, somewhat tolerant of acid for the seeding. If you're looking for a reseeding situation, it's very prolific and it has an early spring growth. Again, here, availability to seed and poor competitor. The availability of seed often has to do if you grow seed in Oregon and spring wheat prices are high, you may lose that stand and it may be repurposed, that field may be repurposed for spring wheat. Has happened to me with my AU Robin. Okay, two maxims. One is, if agronomic, it says two solutions, agronomic plant breeding, the agronomic one is cheaper and faster. Secondly, is that the expected return has to be commensurate with the development. You can't have the development cost that BMW puts in their cars and get the result of this jalopy known as the 1987 Yugo. You can't have that, that doesn't work. So, realizing there ain't no free lunch in this world, cover crops are a link in the value chain, and everyone along this line has to make some money. Even the universities nowadays, if it's public breeding. For minor crops, we have chicken and egg problem. Seed is not available because it isn't used, or isn't used because it's not available. That's for the minor crop. So, if you want to ensure a cover crop supply, you can do local production. We used to have quite a bit of crimson clover production in the southeast. But the consistency of production, seed quality, expertise, again, if you do it at the optimum location, competition for more valuable crops, as I mentioned, storage and shipping cost. Okay, if you're from Texas, you know this, but for us, it's remember the ABT disaster. Where a company tried to corner the seed market, buy up a lot of small seed companies, and in the end went back bankrupt. So who can take that place of the small seed companies? Well, it could be that our regional or state cover crop improvement association. Big challenge for breeding. The area of agronomic utilization and seed production are often disjoint. So, for example, annual ryegrass, 90% is used east of the Mississippi. The seed production is in Oregon, and that's different from agronomic crops. You could breed for performance and species mixture. Question is, can it be done? I looked through the literature. There's one concept paper out there, but no real data. And again, as I said, agronomic solution would be easier. I'm taking the term agronomic solution very broadly. Adjusting species mixture is an agronomic solution. So what we should select for? I think number one is biomass yield, no matter what you do. If you can reduce the seeding rate in the process, it makes it more affordable. Seed yield has the same direction. If I have more seed yield on the species, seed will become more affordable. One of the things you might want to look at is root diameter. Based on the work that Charles Elkins did almost 20 years ago with various grasses, being able to penetrate a hard pan, so have a living plow. Rapid establishment is very important, I believe, because you want to avoid stand failure. So you want to put that stuff out there, you want a stand. And lastly, dual use trait, because you want to recoup the cost. And I think that's going to be this dual use issue is we should seriously look at to make cover crops more affordable if we want producers to adopt it. Thank you for listening to my tour de force. And any questions? We have about one minute. Thank you.
I think we have time for one question. Is there a question?
Yes.
So, seed size and legumes, I bet you tea, for example, have fairly large.
If you have large seed size, you have better emergence. No, no, seed size, small seed size that leads to underperforming. Yeah, if you take the veggies, but veggies have another have other problems. But if you have two legumes, one small side, one large side, the large sides will tend to be better, particularly in soils where you have crusting issues. See, some of our soils in the southeast, when it rains and you have sunshine, it's like concrete, and you can see these little guys here trying to lift those concrete plates. Grasses have much easier. That's why a little grass actually helps you with establishment of legumes.
Great, thank you.